Lord's Hill Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
Good morning, church. Good morning. What a great day today is, this wonderful day that the Lord has made, in which he calls us all to rejoice and be glad. It is always, as usual, just such a great joy to be in the presence of God, to worship him with you. So welcome. Thank you for being here today and giving of yourself in worship of our great God. Yes, today is Friday, and it's not just any Friday. Today is actually the most famous Friday on the planet. More famous than any other day of the week, more famous than anybody actually called Friday. Today is Good Friday. And our theme, the title of the sermon today is Thank God It's Friday. Thank God It's Friday. And I know just by saying those words, I'm sure some of you are already imagining or humming or even singing, you know, the tune, you know, that well-known tune from that well-known song written by that well-known or performed by that well-known person. I'm sure some of you are probably thinking of the acronym TGIF. You know, it was mentioned earlier. It's used to symbolize, you know, Friday, the end of the working week, TGIF, yay, thank God it's Friday. There's actually even a well-known restaurant chain, TGI Friday. TGI, oh, you know that place you can get the thickest Oreo cookie milkshakes in town? And man, they're chicken wings. Okay, that's not why we're here. I'm sure, I suspect some of you are already probably feeling hungry just by saying that. So today we're here to thank God. We're here to say, thank God it's Friday. You know, generally in modern society, we're encouraged to celebrate the weekend. And that applies even for those of us that work shifts, or even if you're working at the weekend. We recognize generally that the weekend is the time, you know, particularly Friday. Friday is when the weekend starts, and it symbolizes a time when, you know, work ceases, when things become easy or easier, you know, we're at peace, we can relax, we're with family. It symbolizes a time of rest. It has come to symbolize a time when there's an end to the blood and the sweat and the tears of the work that we're doing. Well, that wasn't the case for Jesus. A debt was owed, and somebody had to pay up. Come on. Most of us listening will already, I'm sure, know the story. We know Jesus was executed on this day in history. We know that the execution took place. In fact, he was accused, he was tried, he was found guilty and executed. Same day. The judicial process, not quite what it is today. And we know that the execution took the form of a crucifixion, where he was nailed to a cross. The act of crucifying, crucifixion was used, and it was one of the most brutal, one of the most horrific forms of execution that there was. In fact, it wasn't just horrific, it was also public. So people were invited, even allowed to watch a person go through what would have been the worst possible pain and suffering that eventually led to their death. Jesus endured this. He did. The book of John explains that he was nailed to the cross. In fact, all the Gospels mention it, but the book of John gives a little bit of detail in there. The nails went right through him. Goodness, nails went through him. You know, those of you who've seen the movie The Passion of the Christ, I'm sure you have kind of an idea what it might have been like for Jesus. You know, the Passion of the Christ was one thing. The real thing was another. And those Roman soldiers, trust me, they didn't give Jesus any anesthetic. They didn't, you know, they didn't say to him, oh, sharp scratch. I remember, you know, I used to give blood. I gave blood for many, many years, you know, something like 28 years or so. And whenever I would go to give blood, you know, every few, you know, two, three times a year, whatever it was, the nurse would, well, the beginning bits, the nurse would, you know, where they got the tourniquet around your arm, and they found the vein, and they put the anesthetic rub, you know, just, and the antiseptic rub, sorry, just to, you know, clean the area. And then the nurse, you know, comes over and says, oh, and she pulls out that long needle, they're about to put the cannula in, and the nurse says, sharp scratch. You know, sharp scratch? Okay, hold on. One day, I'm telling you, I had to say to them, look, stop saying that to me. Now, let me clarify something. I'm not squeamish, okay? I am certainly not afraid of needles, like someone who shall remain nameless that I am married to. I'm not afraid of needles. But let me tell you something. A needle in your arm is not a sharp scratch. I know some people now are saying amen. You know, come on, you're sticking that piece of metal. You're poking me right under my skin with that piece of metal. And I'm going to feel it. It's not just a scratch. You know, I said, listen, don't tell me sharp scratch. Just stab me. I'm kidding. So let's come back to this. Let's look at let's imagine how it must have been for Jesus. You know, he didn't have a nurse with a needle. You know, he didn't have the antiseptic rub to clean the skin. These Roman soldiers, they weren't gentle with him when they put the nails in his hands. They would have been intentional to ensure that he felt every blow of the hammer on the nail as it went through him, as it tore through his hands and his feet, his ligaments, his joints. They didn't care. Let me remind those of you that know, this wasn't imposed on Jesus. Jesus wasn't forced to the cross. Unlike every other accused person that had no capacity to avoid the brutality, Jesus was well capable. Yeah, I mean, he jolly well could have escaped if he wanted to, yet he allowed himself to be nailed to the cross. And the thing is, you know, as human beings in our insatiable, ever insatiable quest for knowledge, over the centuries, people have asked the question, so how did it work? Was it in his palm? Was it in his wrist? Where did the nails go? How many nails? How many nails were used? You know, when you read the Gospels, when you read John and you go through, you know, people have debated, you know, was it three nails? Was it five nails? So was it more than that? You know what I say to this? My answer is, okay. Because here's what I see. This is the way I see it. It actually doesn't matter whether it was three nails or five or 35 or 350 nails. Jesus was more than capable of coming down from that cross if he wanted to. At the point of his arrest, when Peter was trying to defend him, we read it in the preceding chapter, in Matthew chapter 26. Jesus says, do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? 12 legions of angels. You know, a legion of angels, people, let's do the maths. A legion of angels, one legion is 6,000. 12 legions, that's 72,000 angels. So let's call it as it is. You know, this is Jesus we're talking about. Honestly, he didn't even need angels. I mean, this is, you know, the Jesus that walked through a wall. The Jesus that called Lazarus out of the tomb many, many days after he'd been dead. The same Jesus that walked on water. God himself in the flesh. He didn't need angels. I mean, yes, if the angels had come, they would have symbolized the rescue. You know, they would have epitomized, they would have shown people, wow, look what happened. But honestly, the angels weren't even required, no matter what their number. Jesus could have just floated off that cross. But something held him there. Something held him there. On that very first Friday, that very first Good Friday, the one that we're thanking God for today, the question is, what held him there? And so today I want to put to you that there were three things that held Jesus to that cross. Three things. And I'm going to lay them out very simply, very briefly in a moment. And as I do so, I'll illustrate with a short story. And when I tell the stories, I want you to examine, just listen to the stories and see who in that story could you identify with. See if you can see yourself at any point in your life, maybe not now, maybe in your past, maybe who you're trying to be. Try and see where in the story you can identify. So, as I said, there were three things that held Jesus to the cross on that Good Friday. Number one, your sin held him to the cross. Yes, you. Your sin. You. If you heard me say the word you, that means I'm talking about you. Your sin held him there. I know people who see themselves, you know, I'm sure some of us will know people like this. They see themselves as having no sin. You know, these people, it's almost as if they lack the ability to understand what they've done wrong. And even when they know that they've done something, sometimes it's somebody else's fault. So here's the first story. The story is told of a very rich man, and he embarked on a journey by ship. And the ship was crewed by a number of convicts. So the convicts were serving on the ship. They were rowing the ship. And they were doing it as part of their punishment. One day, this rich man was passing through, you know, the area where the convicts were. And he asked quite a number of them, several of them. He asked them, he said, you know, what did you do? Why are you here? What was your offense? Every single one of the men laid the blame to someone else. One was, oh, it's my brother that this and that and the other. The other one, you know, laid the blame. Somebody even said, yo, the judge was bribed. And he heard all these people talking. And then suddenly there was one young man. And this young man says, oh, sir, I don't actually have any excuses. I belong here. I stole money. That's why I'm here. I wanted money and I stole it. Nobody is to blame except me. Now, when he heard this, the rich man grabbed this guy, grabbed him by the shoulder, and he says, oh, you crook. What are you doing here amongst all these honest men? What are you doing amongst all these honest people? Guards, get him off this ship. See what he did there? Because immediately he set the man free whilst the others were left to pull at their oars. And saints of God, sometimes we may not want to admit that we are directly responsible for Christ's suffering. But we cannot escape the truth that we are the guilty party. We did it. Whether we admit it or not, it was our fault. It was your fault. It was my fault. Your sin held him to the cross. However, it wasn't your sin alone. Number two, his own forgiving held him to the cross. Isaiah 53 tells us that he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds, by his stripes, the King James says, we are healed. You see, the wounds, the bruising, the iniquities that were ascribed to him, the piercing, the crushing, the punishment, these things weren't just something that Jesus endured and now we owe him, you know, as it would be if he was, you know, if he was some cousin or some uncle that did that for us. Come on, I'm sure most of us, you know, will know someone that would gladly and continually remind us how much we hurt them and what we did wrong. You know, sometimes it's not even with words. Sometimes people remind you of your past, you know, with their, you know, that, you know what I mean, that look, that tone, that attitude, you know, that holds in their face, you know, that thing that you did in 1993 that they're trying to remind you of. You know. So here's the illustration. Forgiving. There was an American family, the Adams family. They lived in Connecticut during the Second World War. This is quite a well-known story, so you may have heard it before. And these men, this family, the Adams family, Mr. Adams and Mrs. Adams, they opened up their home to a refugee boy. This boy was called Paul Piotrostanalsi. Paul Piotrostanalsi. Yes, that was his name. And of their own, they had two daughters there, and they had a six-year-old son called Sammy. So their son, Sammy. Now, Sammy and Paul quickly became good friends. They became virtually inseparable. Unfortunately, one day, Paul, the refugee boy, went swimming in some contaminated water. And he became so ill that they had to quarantine him in the attic of their house by himself. Does that ring any bells? Quarantine, self-isolation. And they did this so that he wouldn't infect the other children. Of course, Paul missed his best friend, Sammy, their son. And it got so bad that one night he crawled out of his bed, he went downstairs, went to Sammy's room and got into bed with him and fell asleep. The next morning, Mr. Adams and Mrs. Adams discovered Paul in bed with their son, having breathed over their son, Sammy, all night. Now, Paul, you know, very quickly, not long after that, Paul recovered his health. Unfortunately, Sammy, their son, who had other health issues, became severely ill and died 3 days later. It was the worst tragedy to ever befall that family. A year later, the doctor, the family doctor, the one who had treated both boys, unfortunately, he couldn't save Sammy, who had treated both boys, he was doing a house call, and as he drove up, you know, came up the driveway in his car, he saw Paul working in the garden with Mr. Adams. Now, the driver, the doctor, he got out of the car, and he approached Mr. Adams, and he said, "What is this Paul, you know, Piostro, whatever his name is, doing here after everything he did to your family?" Mr. Adams got up from where he was doing his own gardening and he walked over to Paul. He put his arms around Paul's shoulders and he said, "Don't worry, doctor. You won't have any more trouble pronouncing his name. His name is Paul Adams. You see, we adopted him as our son." Saints, because of the work of Jesus, God has forgiven us. In fact, more than forgiven us, he's adopted us. You see, the forgiving grace of God will always outweigh any amount of sin in your past. Romans chapter 5, verse 8 summarizes it this way. It says, "God demonstrates his own love for us in this, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." You see, through the work of Jesus on the cross, because of the work of Jesus on the cross, our sins were forgiven. So the second thing that held Jesus on the cross on that Good Friday was his forgiving nature. So first we see that our sin held him there. However, it wasn't alone. Beyond our sin, his forgiving nature, his forgiving held him to the cross. And that brings me to the third thing. And this particular one, I would say, is the biggest one. This is the real reason the other two reasons could actually even exist. Number three, his love held him to the cross. You know, the Bible is very, very clear. It's crystal clear on God's love for us. Let me start with this one. The most recognized, the most remembered, the most known verse in the entire Bible, John chapter 3, verse 16. And it says, come on, you can say it with me, I'm sure. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. His one and only begotten son, that whosoever should believe in him will not perish, but have everlasting life. Again in the book of John, this time chapter 10, verses 17 and 18 tell us, it says the reason, I mean, Jesus was the one talking. It says, the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have the authority to lay it down and the authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Wow, what an act of love to be that sacrificial. And it reminds me of the other text, also from John, that says, greater love has no one than this, that he lay his life down for his friends. John 15:30. Oh. Now, you know, knowing all of this stuff about Jesus, Paul, writing to the church, the Galatian church, said these words. He said, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Galatians 2:20. And here's the story. I heard the story of a pastor who saw a young boy, and this young boy was swinging a birdcage. At the bottom of the cage, there were three little birds, and these birds were shivering, probably with cold, probably with fright. And the pastor asked them, he said, oh, what have you got there? The boy answered, they're just some old birds. So what are you going to do with them? The pastor asked. Well, I'm going to take them home, and I'm going to have fun with them. I'm going to tease them, I'm going to pull out their feathers, and I'm going to make them fight. I'm going to have a really good time messing about with them. In fact, I've got some cats, and my cats like birds, so I'll take the birds to the cats. The pastor was silent for a moment, and then he asked, how much do you want for the birds? What? The birds? You don't want these birds. They're just plain old field birds. I mean, they don't sing. They're not even pretty. The pastor looked him straight in the eye. I said, how much? The boy saw an opportunity. And so he says, okay, I'll take 10 pounds for them. The pastor took out a 10-pound note, placed it in the boy's hand. In an instant, the boy had gone. The pastor then picked up the cage. He walked to a nearby park. He opened the door and gently, softly, tapping on the bars of the cage, he persuaded the birds out and he set them free. Well, there's actually another part of the story. And it goes like this. One day, Jesus saw Satan. And Satan had just come from the Garden of Eden and he was gloating and he was boasting. And Jesus said, what are you gloating about? What's going on? Satan answered, yes, oh yes. I just caught the world full of people down there. I set a trap and I used bait that I knew they couldn't resist. And I got them all. What are you going to do with them? These people? I'm going to have fun with this lot. I'm going to teach them how to gossip about each other, how to hate each other, how to abuse each other, how to promote fear, how to practice wickedness. I'm going to teach them even how to kill each other. I'm really going to have fun with these guys. Jesus asked him, and so what will you do when you're finished with them? Satan answered, well, there's no point hanging on to them. When I'm done, I'm going to kill them all. Jesus did not hesitate, and he asked, how much do you want for them? These ones, please, you don't want these people. They're no good. Totally disloyal. If you take them, they're just going to hate you. They're going to spit on you. They're going to curse you. They'll probably even kill you. You really don't want these people. Jesus looked him straight in the eye. I said, how much? Satan sneered at Jesus and answered, I want all your tears. I want all your blood. Jesus stretched out his arms on that cross, and he paid the price. And because he paid that price, he then picked up the cage and he opened the door and he set them free. You know, there's a song we sing. How deep the Father's love for us. Many of you will know it. Many of you will know it. Such powerful, powerful words. Verse 2 says, ashamed I hear my mocking voice call out among the scoffers. It was my sin that held him there until it was accomplished. His dying breath has brought me life. I know that it is finished. The famous painter Rembrandt did a painting of the crucifixion scene. And in his painting, Rembrandt painted his own face as one of the people near the cross. And he did it to show his own responsibility in the sin for which Jesus paid. Going back to the words of that song, the final bit of the song says, why should I gain from his reward? I cannot give an answer. But this I know with all my heart. His wounds have paid my ransom. Earlier on, I said that Friday marks the beginning of the weekend. Friday has come to epitomize a time of rest, a time of peace, a time of refreshing. Friday signifies the time when the work is done. Back in the day, even, Friday typically was payday. And also, because it was payday, it was when the bills were paid. Friday was when the debts were collected. Saints of God, the debt we owed would have meant the death of us. And Jesus knew that. And so he stepped in to sort it out. On that Friday, Jesus paid a debt that he did not owe because we owed a debt that we could not pay. For that reason, we can truly say, thank God it's Friday.
We trust that you have been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information or to follow up on what you have heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.